Hi, this is Marlena, and this is the 2006 Marlena Christmas Holiday Show. It's Christmas Eve in North America and Christmas Day in many parts of the world. And because it's Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, like you, I'm off with friends and family, sharing this very special time of the year. So what I've put together is a pre-recorded show that shares some of my favorite memories from 2006 and before. So I hope that you will enjoy this program and accept it as my holiday card to you. And if this were a card and you could open it and read it, here's what I would say. I sure hope you have a great whatever it is you celebrate. Well, it's certainly been a busy year in the Lieberg household, just south of Seattle, in the state of Washington, in the United States. We've had a guide dog retire, and we've had a new guide dog join the ranks. So, yep, we've got two lovely little girls, and they run around and chase their tails and play with bones and toys and then snuggle up together quite often at the end of the day. Gary the board guy is doing well. He is still infinitely hooked to his computer. And, of course, I wouldn't do such a thing. Never. Not I. But when the power was out for 36 hours last week, I thought I'd just go crazy. Because I couldn't read my blogs. Oh, well. Anyway, it's the holiday season, and so this is the holiday show. So we're going to take a look back at things that happened in the year 2006 on the Marlena Show, in Marlena's life. And hey, we might even strut out to before 2006. Now I'll be back again live next week for New Year's Eve. That's our wedding anniversary, and we're going to spend part of it with you. But for now, enjoy what used to be called the Mylar. Now it's just the ones and zeros. You know, every guest on the Marlena program is memorable, and I have forgotten none of them. But I think that one of the ones that I will long remember and always be so incredibly thrilled with having had the opportunity to get to know a little bit and welcome back each year is this guest. Hey, Ronnie, welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much, Marlena. Good evening to you, and is this a good connection?
It's a great connection. You sound like you're sitting right here in my headphones, man.
Good deal, good deal. That's great. Well, hello to you and all the listeners around the world.
Well,
listening to Marlena tonight. My goodness.
We got it all going on. So how's it been going for you, man?
It's just great. We're here at home in Nashville, Tennessee tonight, and that's a good thing.
City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air there's a feeling of Christmas. Children laughing, people passing, meeting smile after smile. And on every street corner you hear silver bells. Blink a bright red and green as the shoppers rush home with their treasures. Hear the snow crunch, see the kids bunch. This is Santa's big scene. And above all this bustle, you hear silver bells.
Now, of course, one of my very most favorite hobbies is working with and for and on behalf of ACB Radio. And I've done that at various times of the year for the past maybe 5 years, 6 years, who knows, you lose count after a while. And there are a few things that stand out in one's mind when one does a call-in show, a live call-in show. And here's one that's somewhat appropriate to the season. Let's go back to Christmas Day 2004. The email and MSN request boxes are also operating, and they are request at acbradio.org, and we've got a call. Hello, caller, where are you calling from?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, I'm looking for Michael.
Oh, you got the wrong number, but you know what? You're on the worldwide internet. You're on the radio.
Oh, hey.
You are. Yeah. So look, I'm not Michael, and Michael and Michael doesn't live here, but what's your name?
I'm Josh.
Josh, where are you calling from?
Kirkland.
Whoa. Hey, well, see, you know, it's really cool. You are being heard not only on the internet around the world, but you're also being heard on WQNA, which is an FM station in, I think they're in Illinois, and the Wookiee Satellite Network, which is beaming you all over North America.
Nice.
Did you have a good Christmas?
I had an awesome Christmas.
Yeah? What'd you get? What was your best gift?
I got this shirt that I'm that I'm wearing right now that's, it's an Armani shirt, buttoned down, very nice,
and
bright black. Yeah.
Way cool.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm really glad you called, even though you didn't mean to.
No, this is a very funny coincidence.
Well, if you have the internet, you can verify this by going to interactive.acb, not ABC, but ACB. Radio.org, and tune into the rest of the show.
All right.
All right. Hey, listen, tell Michael we said Merry Christmas, whoever he is. Hey, Josh,
right.
You have a good one.
You too. Merry
All right,
Christmas.
See you. Merry Christmas. Ho, 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 that's a joke on me. And was it ever? I couldn't believe it. When I picked up the phone and it was the wrong number. Here at ACB Radio, all of us who work on the project really do appreciate so much each of you who listen. And so we really do make every effort to ensure that the station sounds as good as it can possibly sound, that the quality of the audio is reasonably well put together, and the station sounds generally appealing and interesting. But then there are those days when nothing we do seems to come out the way we want it to. Come on back to 2005, just before the Las Vegas convention, as Rachel Bader begins to tell you for the first time about a great new tournament that we're sponsoring with the folks at All in Play.
We are partnering with All in Play to work on... okay, retake. You can keep the first part. Okay. Where was I going to go with this? Shut up, Larry. This is going to be on the blooper reel. Okay, let's see. Shut up, Larry. Quit laughing, Larry. let's see where I was going to go. Okay. I forgot what I said. Hang on. Oh, heck. I did forget what I just said.
Let's start over.
Oh, I don't want to start over because the first part was good. All right. If you can piece this together, fine. If not, you know, let me know. Okay, 3, 2, 1. We are going to have a great time with two pre-convention tournaments, and we're doing these in partnership with All in Play. And the first one, starting next weekend, is going to be with Crazy Eights, and the second one will be the following weekend, and that is going to be for you poker fans. So whichever game you are into, you are certainly not left out of this at all. The Crazy Eights tournament is going to start at 4 p.m. Eastern on Friday, which is June 17th, and that would be at 22 Universal, and it's going to go for 24 hours. And then the following weekend, which is going to be June 25th, and that tournament is going to be for poker. And that is also going to be a 24-hour tournament starting at 4 p.m. Eastern on Friday, which, again, will be 22 Universal. And we just want to have a lot of fun with this. And oh, heck. Okay. Is my Universal time wrong? Oh, heck, I did. You know why? Let's see. Is my Universal time 20? 20. Damn. You want to do this thing, Larry? Go on. 24th? Oh, hell.
Well, poor Rachel. She eventually got it right. We had a great tournament in 2005. We had another one in 2006. For all I know, we'll have another one in 2007. So when you hear Rachel promoting that or other great activities on the radio, you'll know that it ain't always as easy as it sounds to put it all together. Merry Christmas, Rachel. In August of 2005, many of us were shocked and saddened to learn of the death of Dr. Russell Smith, who was then the CEO of Humanware. He and his wife, Marion, died in their private plane when it went down off the coast of New Zealand. Now, on what would actually be the day of Russell's funeral, we were scheduled on the Marlena program to do a show on which we would be giving away, thanks to the generosity of Russell Smith, a voice note Empower. Instead of doing the show with the giveaway, we did a tribute show to Russell. And during that 2 hours, people called to remember Russell, to talk about how much they would miss Russell, both his friendship and his genius in developing technologies for people who are blind or have low vision. I'd like to share with you one of those tributes. And, you know, working with ACB Radio means that I occasionally get to do something in honor of a friend. And in this case, sadly, it was in honor of the memory of a friend. I took Jonathan Mosen's remembrances of Russell and put them together with this piece of music, because in my heart of hearts, I know that if Russell could give us a message, this music portrays the message Russell would leave us with.
I think when I look back on my memories of Russell, I think of Russell as a very softly spoken, kind man with quite a broad New Zealand accent, very humble, and yet extremely methodical in his thinking, somebody who could analyze a problem, get right to its roots, and really absorb information in this incredibly quick and thorough way.
You never lose your sense of wonder. May you never take one single breath for granted. God forbid love ever leave you empty-handed. I hope you still feel small when you stand beside the ocean.
There are many trade shows where we have to go and exhibit as a company, and Russell came to many of them. Not just to meet with the other CEOs and the leadership of the industry, but also to just go on the exhibit floor and spend time with customers. And that's very rare that you get somebody at CEO level actually going down onto the shop floor, as it were, and doing the work of a salesperson.
I hope you do.
I've had a lot of emails from people over the last few days after Russell's death was made public. One of the stories that really moved me was somebody who went to one of the trade shows. He said that they'd heard about one of our products and were very keen to explore it, and heard that there was a good deal going, and this nice man showed them the product and was quite proficient in its use, and it was a Braille product, and in the end made the sale. At the end of the process, the guy was so impressed with this salesperson who had showed him this product, he asked for the person's name, thinking that maybe he could pass on some positive comments, and the person who did the selling said that his name was Russell Smith. He didn't say, "I'm the CEO," and he really did. He really used his position to kind of get any special attention. He's a very quiet and humble sort of guy.
I hope you still feel small when you stand beside the ocean. Whenever one door closes, I hope one more opens.
When HumanWare became so large, Russell was out there feeling the pulse, finding out what people thought of the products and asking them. And I think sometimes he found that not saying who he was, not making a big deal of the fact that he was the chief executive, meant that he got better feedback from people because they felt less reticent about coming forward. At a more personal level, I have lots of memories of Russell because we've travelled on long plane flights together, and we talked about all kinds of things, from families all the way through to how he'd gone into Fry's, which he loved to come to when he was in the States. And Russell would sort of quietly disappear and head off to Fry's for about a couple of hours and come back late with all sorts of bizarre components, or maybe a new PDA and stuff like that. And he loved his technology. He just relished it, enjoyed its use. And I remember just how much fun those trips were, and how he was absolutely comfortable, of course, with guiding a blind person. And one day we were going through security in Los Angeles Airport, and they just instigated this new system where everybody has to be fingerprinted when you come into the United States now. You have to give a left-hand fingerprint and a right-hand fingerprint. And we sat there, sort of, I could tell just by the kind of tone of his voice that he probably had this incredulous look on his face, and I was kind of a bit perplexed, but we did this thing. And after we'd gone through security in his very typical Kiwi kind of New Zealand way, he said, "There you are, you're legit, mate." And that was Russell, very down to earth and very quiet. So we will miss him. We will miss him dreadfully. He was an icon of this industry, and I can only say that as somebody who used the product for so long and got to know him as a colleague over the last 2 years, his loss is a tremendous one to all of us around the world who remember him and used the technology that he helped bring into being.
Dr. Russell Smith, 1944 to 2005.
Soft brown eyes that seem to say, stay a while, I want to play. Would you, could you do, please stop. He's a lonely pup in a Christmas shop. Thank you, lady, thank you, sir. Is there someone else that you'd prefer? He's not selfish, just a flop, though he wags his tail in a Christmas shop. Mr. Santa, if you would send him someone oh so good, someone who will take him home for everyone to see. Christmas time, a Christmas tree with a happy family. Pity him, he's got no pop, he's a lonely pup in a Christmas shop. Mr. Santa, if you would send him someone else so good, someone who will take him home for everyone to see. Christmas time, a Christmas tree with a happy family. Pity him, he's got no pop, he's a lonely pup in a Christmas shop.
One of the biggest things that happened for me this year was the retirement of my wonderful guide, Madeline. Madeline has been with me since 1998. She's traveled over 200,000 air miles on one airline alone and cruised 8 cruises, 7 of which were aboard Royal Caribbean's beautiful ship, the Vision of the Seas. And so, where better to have Madeline's retirement party than the Champagne Terrace of the beautiful Vision of the Seas?
Where should we put this, guys? Let's put it.
What is it?
It is a cake.
Oh, my gosh.
It looks like a dog bone.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, I was wondering, my love, if you could put some plate cleanup.
What you're hearing now is the setup. The Champagne Terrace is a very small, intimate room. And you can hear the band playing in the background. There's a dance floor between us and the band. And it's really like an alcove, which will soon be filled with crew and friends who love Madeline.
Hello.
Hello.
Would you mind if I sat and chatted with you for a minute?
Not at all.
My name is Sandy Jameson.
Hi, Sandy. I'm Marlena Lieber.
I'm Marlena, and I've been hearing about your dog, your seeing eye dog.
Yes.
I am number one dog lover in the world.
Oh, well, you're in the right place then. This is her retirement party.
That's what I just heard.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I used to have I used to be the president of the animal shelter in the little town that I live in.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I have an affiliation with dogs like you and Billy.
Oh.
So congratulations on your dog and his retirement. His or her?
Her. Yes, her name is Madeline.
And I hear you're going back to school to get another one.
Yes, yes, on the 30th of September.
Good for you.
Yes.
And how old is Madeline?
Madeline is 10 and a half.
And you've had her since she was...
I've had her since she was just about a year and a half.
Yeah, that's what it usually is. You're old too.
Yeah. Yeah, well, she has been... She's traveled over 200,000 air miles.
Many people came into the party. We were continually surprised over how many people from the ship actually showed up to honor and pay tribute to Madeline.
Of her sticking her little tongue down into my champagne glass. So we said, there's no better place to retire this dog
yes.
than in the Champagne Lounge on the Vision of the Seas.
Oh,
and we've invited all the staff who love her.
Yes.
And, I mean, they know her so much. They've yes. seen her so many times.
Yes. Yes. How does she do on the ship?
Oh, no problem.
Was she trained to paper train or?
No, she has a box.
She has a box.
Yep, yes, she has a box.
Yes.
She has down on deck 5.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good for her.
Yep. Yep.
That's wonderful.
Hello, Robert.
I see that's how I'm doing.
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. Are you singing tonight?
No. I don't know.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love your dog.
Oh.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And right on your right-hand side here, my name is Margaret.
Thank you. I'm Margaret. I'm Marlena.
I know, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Marlena.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you hire good people.
Some days we do.
Gary, don't forget to take pictures.
That's what she was doing, is selling a
good day.
Braille PDA.
I had a great day. How about you?
That's when they were doing
all
their traveling.
I lost, but I had a good time losing.
That's good.
Yeah. Madeline. Oh, I can't believe it. We have a daughter named Madeline.
Do you do?
I can't believe we call her Maddie. But
throw it away.
Her name is Madeline. Yep. Yeah.
Gary.
And even a few passengers showed up.
Put the card in your pen over here, Lovey, so that when people come, if they have a sign to get, they can
go. Okay, that's fine.
Cabin's just on his way down.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, that's great.
Our dog is one of those little checkers.
When the captain comes, I want to get a picture of him with her over by the my travel agent said, please send me a picture of the dog excusing the captain. Please.
No problem.
And more people join us, including the captain of the ship.
Hi.
Welcome. Come in.
Oh, this is great. Everyone is coming.
Susan,
hi.
Versus team. Mario.
All the voices you're hearing now are voices of the crew.
Alisa.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you? This is Joseph.
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Oh, Madeline's party. She's happy.
Oh, Madeline's having a great time at her party.
She's got her duck.
Did you see her harness over there? We put it up on the champagne.
Mario, come over. Mario, this is my team member.
Oh, hello.
Mario, Marlon. He's here.
This is hello.
Mario, Marlon.
Good evening, ma'am.
How are you? Nice to meet you.
Mario,
Marlon.
Hi,
oh, this is great.
So how's your evening going?
Oh, it's lovely.
Oh, that's nice.
Did Gary take a picture of her cake? Madeline? Madeline, yes? Oh, Madeline, go see the captain. Come on, Madeline. Madeline, you. No, yes. Now, don't knock. Oh, she's got to get her duck. Yeah, don't knock the glasses over. And don't jump up on anybody. Yeah. Oh, she got her duck. Captain, I was wondering if you...
One of the things that the crew love about having a well-behaved dog on the ship is that it's often many, many months between the times that they get to see and pat and touch and love their dogs.
Watch her tail with those glasses. I'll be over on the ship.
Madeline, watch the glasses. Madeline. Yay, watch the glasses. Go to mommy.
And of course, we had all these low tables with all these high, tall, skinny, standing champagne glasses. The champagne, by the way, was provided as a gift from the hotel director. And we had hors d'oeuvres and the cake that you've heard about, shaped like a dog bone, all provided for Madeline's retirement party by the crew who had come to love her so much. And now the cabin attendants are coming in, and they're not normally permitted in the Champagne Terrace. So this is a treat for them as well.
Happy retirement to you. Happy retirement, dear Madeline. Happy retirement to you.
After Madeline's party, we met many of the same crew up at the party for the frequent cruisers, but something nice happened at the end of that party.
The date today is September 14th, and we've just had Madeline's retirement party, and now we are at a party for people who are platinum or diamond crown and anchor members. Crown and Anchor is the logo for Royal Caribbean, and only those who have cruised many times are at this party, and happily we are folks who've cruised many times. In the room, we're in what's called the Showboat Lounge, and it's a smaller lounge. And in the room, there is a three-piece combo playing. However, I don't think they should be playing How Great Thou Art, because that's what they were playing when the Titanic went down. I really think the choice of music, there's an issue here. I don't think they saw the movie, but I did. That's what they played when people were getting out on the deck of the lifeboats, man. And so we're having wine and champagne and hors d'oeuvres. And when we first came into the room, they gave us a hot towel to wipe our hands.
Thank you, John. John's very, very diplomatic and very tactful. He says the senior hotel director means the oldest. This is one oldest. Well, welcome to your party, ladies and gentlemen. Now, during the course of the week, we have a lot of questions about the company and, you know, when did it start, who owns the company, etc., etc. So I thought I'd take a few minutes of time just to give you a brief background of Royal Caribbean Cruise Line. That's what it was called when it started. It's now called Royal Caribbean International. Royal Caribbean was the brainchild of a man called Ed Stephan. Back in the 60s, cruising as we know it today was completely, completely different. There was a few ships sailing out of Miami to the Bahamas on 3 and 4 day cruises. Most of these ships were ex-passenger liners. Ed Stephan at the time was a hotelier in Miami Beach. And he saw the potential in cruising and saw the potential in having ships built specifically for cruising. So he took his ideas in Norway and presented it to two ship-owning families, godmother of the vision. As I said, he's retired. Talking about retirement, a couple of things I want to mention. I don't know if you've seen a lady walking around with a guide dog. The guide dog's name is Madeline. Madeline's been with Marlena for 8.5 years. This is Madeline's retirement cruise. But Madeline's going to a good home. She's staying where she is. Gary's going to take over. He's going to look after Madeline. And on retirement also, next year I'm going to retire, and people say to me, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to go cruising. I love it. You know, I want to be one of you people. I'm going to sit and enjoy the cocktail parties. I want to become a Diamond member. And I, you know, have to do 5 or 10 cruises to do this. I've done about 1,000 cruises for the Royal Caribbean, but I haven't paid for any of them, so I'm not entitled to come to the parties. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming to the party. Thank you for your loyalty. And we look forward to having you back again soon. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Tony O'Brien, Senior Hotel Director, Royal Caribbean International. I know some of you are a little concerned about Tony's retirement, but let me let you know Tony's going to a good home.
But we're not keeping him.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to let you know from day one, we spent a lot of money on advertising. There's no doubt about it. Marketing and advertising.
Well, that was the voice of Tony O'Prey, the hotel director, aboard the beautiful Vision of the Seas. And then 2 weeks later, something wonderful happened in my life. Along came Agnes.
Marlena, you ready?
Yep.
Okay. All right, come on down. Go get your girl. So let me tell you, here, ma'am. Okay. So you are getting Agnes, A-G-N-E-S. And she's a lab golden retriever cross. And she's a yellow lab golden retriever cross.
Okay. I guess if I could get used to Madeline, I can get used to Agnes.
It's actually very simple. You have a couch. Take a seat.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to take your leash and go get her.
Okay.
Okay. Marlene,
you
ready?
Where's Agnes? She's tiny.
Yeah.
She's so tiny. Yeah. Oh, she's so tiny. Oh, she's so soft. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
This is very
exciting,
new mama.
Okay. Agnes.
Molly's taking the picture into your lap. Agnes is 21 and a half inches. And she's 56.8 pounds. And she was born February 15th, 2005. So she is now 20 months old, and she'll be 2 this coming February, the day after Valentine's Day. You cry. Aww. Agnes is a beautiful red color. You know how the yellow labs can go from like white to red?
Yeah.
She's like that. She's a nice red color.
Yes.
Good girl. And you can feel she has really soft ears. Her coat is really soft, but especially her ears. And I'm trying to see what her eyes are. She has dark eyes, dark brown, nice black nose. And her belly, what happens with the yellow labs is usually the belly is a little bit lighter than the rest of them is.
Yeah.
So hers is kind of like a caramel color.
Yeah.
And then the same thing along the back of her hips and her thighs. She's got a narrow frame, like she's got a very sort of petite build to her.
Yeah, she's
very
nice
feminine.
And tiny.
Mm-hmm.
Agnes, sit. Good girl. Good girl. Sit.
And she loves people. And she loves to have people's hands on her. She's going to find she's really going to keep staying nice and close to
you. Good girl. Yep.
She's going to want to forage.
Okay.
She's very excited right now.
Heel.
Good for you.
Good girl. Heel.
Good for you.
Good girl.
Good girl.
Good girl. Agnes. Heel. Good girl.
Okay, Marlon. I'm going to have you just leave your door propped open and just hang out with her, okay?
I like your eyes. I like your nose. I
On January 7th of 2007, it will be Agnes's turn to be aboard the beautiful Vision of the Seas. We will take Agnes on her first cruise aboard our beloved ship. It was the first ship on which Madeline cruised, and we think it should be the first ship on which Agnes cruises. What'll Madeline do? She's staying with her Aunt Kelly and Uncle Don and little brother guide dog puppy in raising, Mr. Moby.
Oh, Agnes, won't you go with me? We'll be married in style, and we'll cross Lake Michigan, so blue and so wild. We'll cross over Lake Michigan till we come to the shore, and our orchards will blossom for our babies as they're born. Oh, yes, I will go with you, leave Wisconsin behind, though my parents think a little of my life on a farm. Oh, to leave the gay city life, to be buried on a farm. But I'll watch the orchards bloom in spring, spend the winters warm in your arms.
This year brought about an interesting and exciting victory for ACB on the legal front, dealing with, of all things, money. Here's Melanie Brunson, Executive Director of the American Council of the Blind, to give us a little more information.
Essentially started this process with one goal in mind, and that is to get the Treasury Department to, one, seriously investigate the feasibility of providing currency that is independently identifiable by blind and visually impaired people, and two, putting into place once that investigation is completed, some method by which that identification can be completed. We did not specify that the Treasury had to do any particular thing. We simply outlined in our complaint to the court the various options that are now in place and are being used in some countries as examples of the kinds of things that could be done in order to make accessible currency available to people who have visual impairments.
There, some of the response that I have been made aware of, some of which I've heard directly, others I've heard through second, third, and fourth hand, in opposition to this, include the concern about the size of the bill, which you've addressed, and also that the image is now present that we who are blind don't have access to money when, in fact, we spend it every single day. What is your response to that?
Well, it's kind of a silly argument, since obviously anybody who has any sense at all of the what blind people do, and the people who are making that argument do know it. Blind people do have money available to them. The difficulty that we have with money is the same difficulty that we have with point of sale machines and ATMs and many of the other things that some of the opponents of this action have in fact fought for, and that is independent access without the assistance of sighted people or without the assistance of some awkward and inconvenient technology and, frankly, expensive technology that we have to use in order to make that access work for us as it should.
Working with the ACB radio team means that we all get to be just a little bit creative at times and hope that the end result is something that you will enjoy. Come on back with me to last Christmas, when the ACB radio team put together a great story called Christmas, What Christmas? Now, the way this was done was that we all free-formed it. You know, have you ever played that game, Gossip, where you sit around in a circle and someone whispers something into your ear, and then you whisper it to the next person? And then the person at the end of the circle, or the beginning of the circle, says what they have heard, and it's nothing like what it started out. Well, that's kind of the concept of Christmas, What Christmas? I hope you have as much fun listening to this as we had putting it together.
The season, the DJs on ACB Radio Interactive present a little Christmas story entitled Christmas, What Christmas? Christmas, What Christmas? The house was dark, The time was late. It was Christmas Eve in any city, USA. The Day family were settling down for the night. The two children, Mrs. Day and Mr. Day. Poor Mr. Day. Although outwardly successful, he was a DJ at a local radio station, which was doing very nicely. Mr. Day, at this time of the year, was a troubled man. Mr. Day, born on a Christmas day in 1900 and something, and his parents, in a moment of madness, had given him the name Christmas. Poor Mr. Chris Day, pondering Christmas. How he hated it. It wasn't the added expense of the time of year he minded. In fact, he loved giving presents to his children. It was the fact that ever since early childhood he had been teased mercilessly for having the name Christmas, especially at this time of year. Poor Mr. Day, tossing a little in his bed, but gradually drifting off to sleep, with the words ringing in his ears, "I hate Christmas." He hated Christmas. He lay there pondering, gradually drifting off to sleep, with the very words ringing through his head, "I hate Christmas. I hate Christmas. I hate Christmas."
Then, just as suddenly as the change of narrators in a story, a thought occurred. Change my name. I could make it legal. I don't have to be Christmas Day anymore. I'll run it by my wife, Danita Day. Perhaps she'd be up for it. She does like to joke with the ladies that she has Christmas all year round, but maybe she'd have some ideas. Dickie Day? Ducky Day? Dennis Day? Certainly Danita could come up with something better than that. I hope so. I hope so. I really, really hope so.
While Mr. Day was busy contemplating his name change, his two children, Dalton Day and Jessica Day, each had other things to think about. 15-year-old Dalton Day didn't care one way or the other about Christmas. He didn't absolutely love it, but he didn't hate it either. He just wished for everyone to be happy. His dad seemed so stressed out at this time of the year. Dalton could understand what it must have been like for his father to grow up and being picked on by the other kids. Dalton himself tried not to let the other kids know what his dad's name was. If anyone did discover it and tried to start something, he would respond with something like,
"Oh, come on, you can't really believe that anyone has a name like that."
One thing he really admired his dad for, though, was his profession as a radio disc jockey. He loved going with his dad to the radio station and seeing all the neat equipment and watching him at work. As Dalton was drifting off to sleep, the last thing that came to his mind was,
"The best Christmas gift I could want would be for everyone to be happy on Christmas Day. But I sure wouldn't complain if I got that mixer I wanted too." 10-year-old Jessica Day was very different from her brother Dalton in that she loved everything about Christmas. She loved singing Christmas carols. She loved listening to Christmas music all year round. In fact, the only thing she loved more than helping her mom bake Christmas cookies was helping her brother eat Christmas cookies. Every year, she would beg her parents to decorate her house for Christmas. But since her father didn't care much for Christmas, there wasn't much decorating inside or outside the house, except in Jessica's room. Her mom let her decorate her room until it sparkled with the magic of Christmas. And Jessica loved presents. She wasn't greedy. It wasn't just about receiving gifts that excited Jessica. Although that was pretty cool. It was the giving of presents that she loved. She just couldn't wait to give her family something special on Christmas morning. Since she was only 10, she didn't have much money. So, she had been working for months on something special for each member of her family. She was particularly proud of the gift she had made for her father, because Jessica Day was very proud of her dad's name.
I can't wait to give my daddy his present tomorrow morning. I hope he wears it everywhere so everybody can see his name. And then they will all know how special he is, because his name is Christmas Day.
As Chris Day fell asleep and entered his dream, it quickly became a nightmare. He was quickly taken back to those years in school where the kids would tease him and tease him year after year every time the dreadful Christmas holiday would appear. They would do things like throw snow at him and even a few times sat on him and told him what they wanted for Christmas. That drew big laughs from a lot of the other kids. Didn't help that his older sister, April, who was about 5 years older than him, would contribute to the fun. Like, she'd hang garland off of him, hang candy canes off of him a few times, and even one year somehow tricked him into dressing up like a reindeer. The family dog chased him around the house for a little while. That didn't sit too well with him, even though she got a good laugh out of it. But as the years went by, he and his sister did become closer, and she did apologize after she realized what torment it was causing him. And she did get his son, Dalton, that mixer that he so much wanted. He wanted to follow his dad's footsteps and become a DJ. He loved hearing him play the music and do the Christmas shows each year. Even though Chris Day hated the holiday, he did his duty at producing the Christmas shows each year on this radio station. And Dalton wanted to follow that so much. When he got the mixer, how happy he was.
Yay!
Now his career as a DJ could begin.
Yes, like most boys his age, Dalton Day just couldn't wait to find out what he had gotten for Christmas. So in the middle of the night, he woke up, creeped to the Christmas tree, and looked at the large rectangular box that contained his mixer. Then he carefully edged the wrapping off and looked at it and couldn't resist sliding the mixer out. When Dalton saw the mixer, he couldn't believe his eyes. It was a Mackie, the kind he had seen in his father's radio studio. And there was something else, a Sennheiser microphone, along with some Sennheiser headphones. Dalton had the makings of a great career as a DJ. He certainly had all the equipment he needed. The mixer had 16 channels with inputs for tape recorders, turntables, and even a special one for telephone interviews. He was so overjoyed to have his mixer that he thought, what can I do with this mixer to make my dad happier about Christmas? I'm so happy, and I wish that he could share this happiness too. Then an idea came to him. He decided, I'm going to produce a documentary about what Christmas means to me. Maybe Jessica can help. So then, at the hour of 3 a.m, he stole into Jessica's room and put the idea to her. She jumped out of bed and said, this is wonderful. Let's see if we can produce this before Dad and Mom wake up in the morning. It'll be the greatest Christmas present of all.
It was a cold, frosty night as Christmas Day exited the Union Station subway station. On the sidewalk, he noticed a northeaster wind was blowing and nipping at his nose. So he pulled his 3-in-1 parka snugly around his ears. He was headed to Congress to have them draft a referendum bill to finally stop Christmas Day forever. However, at the Capitol steps, he noticed that Congress was gone on holiday vacation, not to come back till February. Bah humbug! Oh, just my luck. He wandered aimlessly through the streets of Washington, D.C. It was glittering. It was glowing. He dodged a group of shoppers transfixed at the Georgetown holiday windows decorated for the holidays. There was holly hanging from the street lamps, kids singing on the street corners Christmas carols.
He looked up. He saw a wooden path. Oh, that's where a person find a peace and quiet from Christmas. He stepped on the wooden path and glanced up. There was a tree. The tree, it seemed to go forever up in the sky. He wandered a little farther down the wooden path. The city seemed to disappear. Someone, however, howled Merry Christmas and handed him a hot cup of apple cider. There was smoke in the air from a bonfire. He glanced around and saw trees, evergreen trees, decorated peculiar. There was trees decorated. One had manatees and pink flamingos and good grief cocktail glasses. Across the way was a evergreen decorated with pineapples and white orchids and all kind of different chalets and everything. There was trees of all kinds of size. Oh, good grief! There was Christmas carols coming out of loudspeakers just blaring. What is becoming of Christmas Day? Good grief! All I want is some peace. Take me away. This can't be Christmas. I'm Christmas Day. Christmas Day, take me away. Please take me away.
Meanwhile, back at the day house, Danita awoke with a start. Her husband was nowhere to be found. She looked through the house for him and didn't find him. She went to the front entrance and noticed that Christmas's Parker was gone. She was both relieved and worried. It was Christmas Day's habit to go out on the night before Christmas to, as he put it, clear my head and get this stupid Christmas holiday out of my mind. At the same time, she was worried because it was the middle of the night, and Christmas was usually back home at this time. Danita was confused about her husband. He said that he hated Christmas, and she understood why, with his schoolmates and even his older sister relentlessly teasing him about his name. At the same time, he seemed to embody the very thing he hated. He was a very giving person. When he saw a homeless person on the street, he would stop and offer to buy them something to eat. He generously gave of his time and money to organizations that did so much for many people. When Christmas Day produced the annual show for his radio station, she was amazed as to how well it sounded. It was true that he always did an excellent job at whatever he did, but the Christmas show was different. There was something almost magical about it. If you didn't personally know of Mr. Day's loathing of Christmas, you'd almost believe he was born and raised at the North Pole. His show was so good. Mrs. Day even recalled an incident during one Christmas season when she and Christmas were walking together, enjoying a beautiful winter's day. She didn't notice, but Mr. Day saw a beautiful wooden reindeer in an elderly lady's yard. A good friend of the Day's had been blown over by the wind. He stopped, went over, and set the deer back up. He did comment, "Someone should have staked up that stupid reindeer." Danita asked him, "If you hate Christmas so much, then why did you do that?" Christmas said, "The old lady sure can't do that for herself. The reindeer may represent a stupid day to me, but the old lady takes pride in it and the appearance of her yard." When Danita thought of all that her husband did, she felt that, ironically, there was nobody who better represented Christmas, the very holiday he hated. In fact, Christmas was like this no matter what time of year it was. Danita thought, "I know Christmas may hate the day he's named after, but I can't think of anyone who embodies the day better than he does. Maybe since he sees the Christmas day as just another day, he can separate himself from it and show people what it means, even though he may not realize it." Danita knew that Christmas always carried his cell phone with him, and she decided to call him just to make sure he was all right. She knew just how much the season, and particularly this night, bothered him.
Chris Day could hear a faint ringing in his ears. He was hanging dazedly onto a lamppost, panting and out of breath. He was frightened and confused. If only that darned ringing in his head would stop. Then he heard another sound, a kind of musical wheeze. Faint at first, and then magically becoming the distant skirl of Scottish bagpipes. The shadows resolved into a wizened old man, The old man wore a shabby kilt and sipped straight from a bottle of best Scottish malt whiskey. He thought, now I know I must be dreaming.
Well, good day to ye, Christmas Day, said the old man.
Who are you? Said Chris.
Why, is it no obvious? I'm the ghost of your old great-uncle Hector McDay, sent to gie ye a wee lesson in perspective.
What do you want from me? Said Chris, feeling as though he ought to pinch himself very hard. Old Hector swigged from the bottle.
I'm going to take you on a wee journey. He gave a self-satisfied smack of his lips.
Chris closed his eyes tightly, anticipating the sudden vertigo of being spirited bodily into the air. He opened his eyes to see that old Hector McDade had hailed a taxi from the street.
Do you have any cash, man? I've clean forgot my pocketbook.
They visited the local shopping mall, where Uncle Hector bade Chris look upon all the happy shoppers, excitedly bustling to and fro, searching for the perfect gift for their loved ones.
What do you see? Said old Uncle Hector.
Well, I see good people being bled of their hard-earned cash by big business. I see people made to feel the only way they can demonstrate their love is by how much they spend. Hector scowled and muttered under his breath. Back in the street, old Hector put the whiskey on the sidewalk.
Is that whiskey bottle half full or half empty?
Chris bent over to look more closely. Behind him, old Hector McDay took careful aim and delivered an unerring kick to Christmas Day's rump. And then he promptly disappeared in a soft puff of air and a bagpipe skirl. His last words echoed back from nowhere.
And if you change your name, I'll be back to gie you one with the other foot.
Sprawled on the sidewalk, Chris tried to shake the ringing from his head. He gradually realised that the ringing was coming from his cell phone.
Hi, hon, said his wife's concerned voice. Are you okay?
Well, honey, I don't know really, but I certainly know how Scrooge feels now. At the other end of the line, there came an audible sigh. Well, come home, dear, she said, as if persuading a confused child. The decorations, they'll need putting up. Oh, all right, he said grumpily. Christmas. Why can't my dad call me by another name instead? Grumbling again, said a voice from behind him. Christmas turned around in shock, and in so doing, dropped his mobile phone, discharging battery, SIM card and all. What he saw alarmed him. No, frightened him almost to paralysis. Who are you? He stammered to the giant of a man he'd come face to face with. Me? I'll tell you later, the giant said, in a twang far removed from the Scottish burr of Uncle McDay. Pick up your mobile and follow me, the giant commanded. And Christmas, having picked up his mobile, followed the giant. He found it impossible to do anything else besides. After a few yards walk, or ambling in Christmas's case, they came upon a street corner where a platform had been raised, and on it were nine musicians and their instruments all tuned up and ready for an outdoor gig. The giant led Christmas to the front of the crowd, then promptly made his own way to the platform and to the microphone. Then he announced clearly in the peculiar twang for the whole crowd to hear. There is one among us who hates his name. In fact, he gets a kick out of hating his name, and got one in the rump earlier for insisting on hating his name. To his horror and amazement, the crowd hissed and booed, then rushed forward, eager to deliver the same kick as Uncle MacDay to Christmas's already bruised rump. "Stop!" roared the giant's booming voice from the microphone. The crowd stopped dead, as if stuck by glue. Silence filled the air. It was so heavy that one could have heard a pin drop. And then one did. It was the band, striking up, confident and loud. And the giant began singing a song.
Ow! I'm from South Africa and my name is Kalulon the Sample. And when I went up to college, all my friends thought my name was too long. So they called me Chris and it stuck with me forever. So I'm now a Christmas hamper and I see nothing wrong. Yeah, I am a Christmas hamper, packaged but not wrapped. And everyone receives me for that. I'm so glad. Your parents took a special day to your name. There's nothing so disgraceful than to react to it with shame.
When the song had ended, the giant Christmas hamper said, "We, the ghosts of days gone by, do not believe in the sticky approach all the time. We teach using the stick and the carrot. Uncle MacDay gave Christmas the stick, so I have been charged to feed him the carrot. The next ghost who has to teach Christmas to appreciate his own sacred name, I have no doubt will stick it into him again." Christmas stood there, agape and aghast. Then the world seemed to spin and to whirl around him, and he found himself back where Uncle MacDay had kicked him.
Now, you guys are probably all asking yourselves, how in the world are these two going to produce a documentary about what Christmas means to them at 3 a.m? Well, it wasn't easy, but Dalton and Jessica did just that. They produced this documentary, and after they finished, they listened to their work using the mixer. "I don't know, there's a few mistakes in there," Dalton said. Jessica said, "Well, we don't have a lot of time, so we'll just give it to Dad and hopefully he'll like it." And they did. And, of course, their dad just loved it. He thought it was the greatest thing he'd ever heard. So, Dalton and Jessica's work did eventually go to something good, and so did the mixer. The mixer played a very important role in this. After all, if he didn't have the mixer, he would have bad sound quality, and you can't have bad sound quality on a documentary. It's not good. So, he produced it, and they loved it.
Christmas Day walked away looking dejected and wondered what he would do about his name. Two of his dead relatives didn't think he should change his name, and they threatened him with a visit from a third. Lost in his thoughts, he didn't hear the semi-truck coming from behind.
"Where are you going, son?"
the trucker asked as the door swung open. Chris didn't think he should take this ride, but his feet were getting awfully sore, so he climbed up into the cab. He told the trucker to drop him off a block away from his house. He wasn't stupid enough to give some weirdo his address. Christmas realized that the trucker was listening to his radio station, but coming from the speakers was an unfamiliar voice. Did the program director hire a new guy? Were they picking up some satellite feed? Were they carrying more of that crazy ACB radio interactive programming?
No sports, no rock, no information for mindless chatter. We're your station.
Alright, alright, alright. This is Uncle Jack on the radio. And I just want to send this song out to my nephew, Christmas Day. Hey man, if you change your name, I'll give you a boot to the head.
Boot to the head! Boot to the head!
Hey, I don't want no boot to the head, Chris thought, as the truck came to a stop in front of the store that was a block from his house. Chris climbed out of the cab, shivering and shaking, and rubbing his head as if he had just had a steel-toe boot smacked into his cranium.
As he began walking the block to his house, Chris realized that he hadn't called Donata back. The last thing she would have heard was his mobile phone crashing to the ground, and she must be very worried. He dialed the number, and she answered almost instantly.
Chris?
Hi, darling. I'm sorry you haven't heard from me in all this time.
Oh, that's okay. I heard your uncle's dedication on the radio, so I knew you must be okay. It's good to hear your voice, though. Are you thinking of changing your name?
Well, I was, but I'm thinking again. The dedication you heard is just one of the many weird things I've been through today.
And as he walked, he told her of the bizarre encounters he'd had with his relatives and promised he'd be home very soon. As he turned the corner, a woman who he hadn't noticed until then drew level with him. Hi.
Hello.
I couldn't help overhearing your conversation. People are going to an awful lot of trouble for you. What name's so bad that you need to be convinced to keep it?
My name's Chris.
Well, so is mine. What's yours short for?
Christmas. My name's Christmas Day.
Oh, I can top that. My name's Christian Hater.
Oh.
Exactly. Oh. I'm sure I'd be up on terrorism charges right now if I didn't know Mary Cheney.
Yeah, I guess. What on earth were your parents thinking when they named you that?
Oh, they didn't plan it that way. I got my last name when my parents separated and my mother and I took on her maiden name.
Okay, so why haven't you changed it since?
Because I don't want to. I was named after my grandmother, who I love very much, and I'm proud to belong to my mother's family, and I won't sell them out because of other people's prejudices.
Yeah, I guess it could be much worse.
That's not the point. If you want to change it, you should change it because of what you think of it, not because of what anyone else thinks. Anyway, I've got to get home to my wife, and so do you.
Yeah, you're right. Bye.
See ya.
And as Chris continued along toward his home, he began to revisit the idea of changing his name. After all, what really is so wrong with having a name associated with Christmas Day? Christmas Day. Christmas Day. And then he saw a little girl sitting just outside his house on the front step. And she seemed to be waiting for Christmas Day. She kept looking up into the sky and then down the street again and up into the sky and down the street. And as she sat waiting, she began to read from a little piece of paper.
What Christmas Day means to me. I love Christmas Day. I love Christmas Day because Christmas Day is my daddy. And Christmas Day is always filled with love and joy and laughter and songs and, oh yeah, lots of big surprises and great treats. My daddy isn't home right now. I hope he will always be with me. Christmas Day, on Christmas Day, I'm waiting for my daddy to come home. I love you, Daddy. I love you, Christmas Day.
Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Chris awoken with a start as he felt the plane continue to move toward its final destination. He looked down at his watch and got very excited. He thought to himself, wow, this is great. I haven't missed Christmas Eve yet. It's still time. I can still get home. As he looked around the cabin, he noticed that his commanding officer was also beginning to stir.
Ah, Chris, you're finally awake. Well, I noticed you were sleeping there for quite a while and thought, well, I thought I would catch a little cat nap there myself. Ah, well, what's that you're holding in your hand there, Chris? I noticed that you were reading that rather intently before you fell asleep, and I was just kind of curious.
Chris holds up the piece of paper toward him, and he takes it from him and he begins to read. A tear wells up in the commander's eye, and he sits down next to Chris.
Ah, you must have a really sweet daughter there, Chris.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't have any children, and it really became rather apparent to me, why you have the name that you do.
Chris kind of looked at him inquisitively like, oh, what do you mean? I don't quite understand. The commanding officer continued,
you know, you remember near the time that we are about ready to leave to go home? And you asked me if you could spend some time with the little children there and bring them some Christmas joy?
Yes, I remember that.
Well, I had an opportunity, you didn't know this, but I had an opportunity to go and watch you as you served those little children. The glow in your face and the wonderful countenance which you showed as you played with them, it was a beautiful, beautiful sight. You know, I know sometimes many of the men out there as you served with us teased you about your name, that being Christmas Day. But whatever you do, Chris, please don't change that. It's really who you are. And if anyone were to ask me whether or not there was a Santa Claus, I'd certainly tell them that there certainly is. But his new name is Christmas Day.
It was Christmas Day at last. Chris stood in the brightly lit corridor and listened to the busy sounds all around him. A nurse eyed him mischievously. Looks like you could do with a trim, she called as she disappeared hurriedly through a door, with heels clacking. He felt good about himself. All the adventures of the previous day made him reevaluate Christmas. And what had he learned? Christmas is going to happen anyway. It's up to you what you make of it, how you define it. You just gotta find your niche. Through the big swing doors before him, he could hear the sound of children laughing and singing carols. He had to time it just right. Maybe what really made the difference was listening to the documentary his kids had made for him. He was proud to wear the present his daughter Jessica had given him earlier that morning, even though the rough cloth scratched a little. It was time. Christmas Day smoothed his cap and adjusted his long, white, false beard. He hoisted his sack of toys onto his shoulder. Jessica had stitched the words, Father Christmas, onto the back of his red suit. Ho, 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 bellowed Chris Day, and he pushed his way through the double doors into the cheering of the hospital children's wing.
You've been listening to Christmas, What Christmas, a production of ACB Radio Interactive. The cast in order of appearance were Chrissy Cochran, Greg Brayton, Nikki Keck, Merv Keck, Wayne Michaels, Larry Turnbull, Chris Ramsey, Kim Lookingville, Kevin Miner, John Gerd, Jafar Ahmad, Chris Skarsted, Amanda Tink, Jeff Shang, Marlena Lieberg, and Jeff Bishop. Production was by Wally Harding, Jay Squared, and Shane Davidson. On behalf of ACB Radio Interactive's DJ team, I'd like to wish you all a very, very Merry Christmas.
Done other fun things through collaborating and putting things together, and the way it usually works is that we record in our own homes all around the world the song or story. And then some of our genius people who know far more than I do about how to put something like that together actually put it together and make it work. And it's pretty amazing. Now, here's an example of another collaboration that, while ACB Radio was not involved with the creation of ACB Radio, certainly participated in the public relations for the PodSafe for Peace. If every day were Christmas, you might remember that somewhere around December 5th of 2005, I had Slaw on my show. Slaw, who is a member of the American Council of the Blind and is very active in our showcase at convention. You may know him as Jerry Hallaton. And Jerry put this song up on the PodSafe Music Network last year. It was so interesting to so many people that they got together and from around the world on the PodSafe Music Network, they created this song. It has a great message. I hope you'll enjoy it.
Snow outside my window feels like that time again to me. The mistletoe, a Christmas show, and the lighting of that famous Christmas tree.
quite an effort by the PodSafe Music Network. And literally, people sang their parts from wherever they lived and sent them in to Jerry. And Jerry and his music studio in New York put it all together with the help from other artists. And it's amazing what one can do these days with digital technology. I want to share with you next something that I put together. You might have heard this if you've listened over on the interactive stream to my music show, Friday Folks, every Friday from 2 to 4 in the West, 5 to 7 in the East, and 22 to 0 Universal. But I think I put this together in 2001, if memory serves. I hope you enjoy it. Fireplace all spiced and set to burn. At last, the yearly Christmas race was in the clubhouse turn. The cards were in the mail, all the gifts beneath the tree, and 30 days reprieve till Visa could catch up with me. And though smug satisfaction seemed the order of the day, something was nagging me and would not go away. A week before, I got a letter from my old great aunt. It read, "Of course, I'll understand completely if you can't, but if you find you have some time, how wonderful if we could have a chat and share a cup of Christmas tea." She'd had a mild stroke that year that crippled her left side. Though housebound now, my folks had said it hadn't hurt her pride. They said she'd love to see you. What a nice thing it would be for you to go and maybe have a cup of Christmas tea. But boy, I didn't want to go. Oh, what a bitter pill to see an old relation, and how far she'd gone downhill. I remembered her as vigorous, as funny, and as bright. I remembered Christmas Eves when she'd regaled us half the night. I didn't want to risk all that. I didn't want the pain. I didn't need to be depressed. I didn't need the strain. And what about my brother? She's his aunt, too. I thought I had it justified. But then, before I knew, the reasons not to go I so painstakingly built were cracking wide and crumbling in an acid rain of guilt. I put on my boots and gloves and cap, shame stinging every pore, and armed with squeegee, sand, and map, I went out the front door. I drove from the suburbs to the older part of town. The pastels of newer homes gave way to gray and brown. I had that disembodied feeling as I pulled up and stopped beside the wooden house that held the Christmas cup. How I got to that door, I really couldn't tell. I watched my hand raised, and I pushed the button of the bell. I waited, aided nervously by rocking to and fro, and just as I was thinking I should turn around and go, I heard the rattle of the china in the hutch against the wall, and the triple beat of 2 feet and a crutch came down the hall. The clicking of the door latch and the sliding of the bolt and a little swollen struggle popped it open with a jolt. She stood there, pale and tiny, looking fragile as an egg. I forced myself from staring at the brace that held her leg. And though her thick bifocals seemed to crack and spread her eyes, their milky and refracted depths lit up with young surprise. "Come in, come in," she laughed the words. She took me by the hand, and all my fears dissolved away, as if by her command. We went inside, and then, before I knew how to react, before my ears and eyes and nose, was Christmas past, alive, intact. The scent of candied oranges, of cinnamon and pine, the antique wooden soldiers, all in their military line, the porcelain nativity I'd always loved so much, the Dresden and the crystal I'd been told I mustn't touch. My spirit fairly bolted like a child out of class and danced among the ornaments of calico and glass. Like magic, I was six again, deep in a Christmas spell, steeped in the million memories the girl inside me knew so well. And here, among old Christmas cards so lovingly displayed, a special place of honor for the ones we kids had made. And there, beside her rocking chair, the center of it all, my great aunt stood and said how nice it was I'd come to call. I sat and rattled on about the weather and the flu. She listened very patiently, then smiled and said, "What's new?" Thoughts and words began to flow. I started making sense. I lost the phony breeziness I use when I get tense. She was still passionately interested in everything I did. Positive, encouraging, just like when I was a kid. Simple generalities still sent her into fits. She demanded the specifics, the particulars, the bits. We talked about the limitations she'd had to face. She spoke with utter candor and with humor and good grace, and then, defying the reality of crutch and straightened knee, on wings of hospitality she flew to brew the tea. I sat alone with feelings that I hadn't felt in years. I looked around at Christmas through a thick, hot blur of tears. And the candles and the holly she'd arranged on every shelf, the impossibly good cookies still somehow baked herself. But these rich, tactile memories became quite pale and thin when measured by the Christmas my great-aunt kept within. Her body halved and nearly spent, but my great-aunt was whole. I saw a Christmas miracle, the triumph of a soul, the triple beat of 2 feet, and a crutch came down the hall, the rattle of the china in the hutch against the wall. She poured 2 cups. She smiled, and then handed one to me. And then we settled back and had a Christmas cup of tea. I told you that that was 2001, and as I sat here listening to it play, I remembered that it was the first Christmas that I had a Braille note, and I was reading the poem from my Braille note's Braille display. So it was Christmas of 2000. But in any case, it was a lot of fun to put that together, and I hope that you enjoyed it. ACB Radio is very, very fortunate to not only have the best listeners in the world, but also some of the most talented production people. I mean, we got people who can take a file that is just really flat and they can create something that actually sounds pretty darn good. So I want to wish all of the members of my team at ACB Radio, ACB Radio Mainstream, ACB Radio Interactive, a very, very happy and wonderful holiday. Merry Christmas. And I'm looking forward to another year of working with some of the most intelligent and brilliant minds, I think, in audio that you're going to find, at least on the web. And speaking of those brilliant and intelligent minds, let's let the ACB Radio staff end this segment of the Marlena Christmas 2006 show with a message for you.
Good tidings for Christmas
and a happy new year.
Oh, bring us a figgy pudding.
Oh, bring us a figgy pudding.
Yeah, bring us a figgy pudding.
And a cup of good cheer.
Good tidings we bring to you and your kin.
Good tidings for Christmas
and a happy new year.
We won't go until we get some.
We won't go until we get some. We won't go until we get some.
So bring some out here.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Well, this wraps up the pre-recorded version of the Marlena program for the week of December 25th, 2006. And to wrap up the program, I want to take you to where Gary and I were last year at this time. Now, this file you're about to hear has not really been edited. And if you ever had the impression that I was straight-laced, conservative, and not outgoing, this ought to change your mind a little bit. It is aboard yet another cruise on our beloved ship, the Vision of the Seas, the Royal Caribbean ship. And it takes place on New Year's Eve of 2005. Please join me next week live on New Year's Eve. It's Gary's and my anniversary, and we'd love to spend a piece of it with you. So until then, I hope your Christmas was absolutely every single thing you wanted it to be, and that you got to spend it in the company of the people and the friends you love the most. See you next week on New Year's Eve with Marlena.
Free New Year's champagne toast.
little bit to get this
here,
the
grab
sound
my arm.
Of the crowd.
Grab my arm, I'll walk you out.
All right. Happy New Year!
I'm going to go over here.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! I want to get the cheering.
Move over with me. Here, you got a table. I'm going to go right out into the middle.
All right, right out into the middle we go.
Okay, ready? Oh, we're going to go right out to the center, right here.
All right.
Ready?
Ready.
We're standing next to a guy in kilt.
In kilt. Happy New Year! All right.
Come on right here. You're going to get closer. Come on in here.
Oh, closer.
Move right in there. Your back will be really close.
Oh, we're getting the
result. I'll tell you when the booty bag
is. It's starting right there.
Standing in the atrium, a four-story high atrium of the Vision of the Seas, passengers who are on the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th decks standing at the rail of the atrium are tossing beautifully colored balloons and streamers down to us. The band is playing just behind us, and there must be at least 2,000 people gathered in one spot to wish each other a Happy New Year. It was a great place to start the year of 2006. And let me tell you, Times Square in New York has nothing on a cruise ship at New Year's. Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, and join me again next week when I'll be with you live for New Year's Eve with Marlena and hopefully Gary the Board Guy.
Hundreds and hundreds of dollars.